What if I did a slightly different tone for the opening and I was like, hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company. It's a show for fans of The Office, by fans of The Office.
I hear what you're saying, but it's hard for me when you use that tone.
You have a lot to learn about this town, sweetie.
Out of paper, out of stock, there's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly. Free business paper needs or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hey, and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office, by fans of The Office. I'm your host, a crime-fighting beaver named Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, receptionist.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
There is no way of knowing what goes on inside the tiger's head.
Every week, we cover a new topic. This week, fan theories. So the way that this episode...
Sounds spooky.
Yeah. Fan theories. So the way this is going to work this week, I told the guys not to really research the fan theories. I've picked 15 or so that I thought were worth
15.
Just
a lot
couple.
Fans, a lot of fans. Like, is that more than you were expecting?
Sure, yeah, sure yeah, is. Yeah. But please go on.
That I thought were worth discussing, and I'll run them by you. I'll give you a little bit of evidence to support it, and we can decide whether or not we think any of these are plausible. Okay, some of them I think are pretty good. These are from the deepest corners of the internet.
Uh-oh.
The Office Reddit.
Did you get a VPN
page
to search this?
Office dark web.
Went to the dark web.
Bought some social security numbers.
You got a Tor browser?
I'm gonna start with a bombshell. I'm gonna go all over the place. Okay, I'm not gonna build up to anything. We're going right for
blowing
number
the roof
one,
off. Like about Andy Bernard with the printer with the printers catching fire. We are blowing the roof off.
I'll check the web.
Number one, Roy and Angela had an affair. Okay. So
wait, what?
Whoa! What? there's only a few little supporting evidence of this, but I think it's pretty good. Roy picks Angela in the MFK game.
Who'd you do? Is
who
the
would you
the
do?
Game.
Yes. Roy picks
during
Angela.
The fire episode.
What a game!
What's that short blonde accountant? Yeah. He doesn't pick his own wife, his own fiance Pam. He picks Angela. Angela tells Roy he's going to be just fine. He's very strong.
That's when they think they're going to be downsized.
That's right. There is a moment in Casino Night when Michael is making his opening speech.
Casino Night, last episode of season 2.
Yeah. He makes his little opening speech where he's like, you know, says something like new lovers or something like that. And there's a cut to
Lady Luck, Lady Fortune,
yeah,
be on your side. And Stanley says, will Lady Fortune give me a raise?
There's a quick cut to Angela and Roy share a little look at that moment. What do you guys think? Oh, and then lastly, when Roy and Pam are kind of officially breaking up. Wait, let me go back. I think it's at the bar, right? Roy and Pam are back together.
Okay.
They're sitting at the bar, and she's like, I have to talk to you about something. And he's like, I didn't hook up with anyone when we were split up. You know, I had lots of chances.
I think the episode
is really quick to be defensive about that.
I think the episode is Cocktails, season 3.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Kenny and the Jet Skis.
Go on.
What do you think? Plausible?
So... Is that all the evidence?
That's pretty much all the evidence.
That's all the exhibits.
That's pretty much all the exhibits. I would also say just that, you know, we know that Angela is kind of...
She's certainly capable. I have no question Angela would...
Her moral code when it comes to respecting relationships.
I don't know if I can get there. I don't think this is... I think I think there, you have a couple comments. You have a couple looks. I don't know if that counts as a relationship or an affair.
I will, let's really quick too. There's another point that's made in a lot of these fan theories that mentions that the documentary crew and the producers of the documentary do kind of create the narrative. And there's mentions sometimes of things that we don't see, right? Like Meredith got her PhD during the series and stuff like that. And we never see any of that. So, of these fan theories kind of, there's a little bit of that, you know, you have suspension of disbelief that there's things happening behind the scenes that we don't know about. So
I think what is the opposite of suspension of disbelief, which is creation of belief? I think that's what we're engaging in. Because I think a counterpoint in the episode where Dwight hires Trevor to hit Oscar with the pipe, where Angela is arranging for Trevor, Chris Gethard, to hit Dwight with the pipe, or I'm sorry, to hit Oscar with the pipe for cheating on, for having an affair with the senator.
Yeah.
Right. There's a moment where they get in the van to arrange this, and Dwight says, and Trevor says, "Are we safe?" And Dwight says, "Well, there's this documentary crew that's been following basically every move for the past 9 years, but I don't see any of them, so I think we're fine." Right. And then obviously you get everything that's right in there. And then, you know, Angela is revealed as 3 p.m. girl in the trailer for the documentary. And Brian, when Pam goes to see Brian in his apartment, Brian says, "No, we have these like parabolic mics that can catch you from really far away." Like they seem to convey that they can capture whatever they want.
Right.
Or that they did. So I don't know.
But then they capture whatever they want, you know? Whatever they want goes in the documentary, and then they can leave things out if they don't think it's important.
So then it happened, and then it just fizzled out? Like what is the ramification? Like, did it happen?
It was just about the sex, I guess.
Yeah, I think with most fan theories, I think like, okay, if it's true, does it add anything to the show?
Yeah.
That's when I want to believe it.
Right.
Sure, maybe it happened off screen. I don't think it affected the show at all. Mm-hmm. Don't really think it affected the characters. I'm out.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm out.
That's a hard out.
For that reason, I'm out.
I'm kind of in. I think it's funny a little bit. I don't know.
I think you need to suspend your belief.
All right, here's another theory. Mm-hmm. Kevin Malone is a secret genius. Okay?
Right.
Yes. I kind of agree with your
give it to me.
Okay. So this is some of the evidence. Michael makes big mistakes, right? So does Dwight. All these people sometimes make really big mistakes. But we're supposed to believe that Kevin Malone is like the dumbest person in the office. And he doesn't really ever make a big mistake.
He spills chili all over.
That was a pretty big mistake. Mm-hmm. Okay. But
doesn't he have a big accounting error?
Had an accounting error in the webisodes.
No, I'm talking in the show. There's some part where
at the end when they look at Dwight firing Kevin, one of the new people says, "What is this symbol? I can't make out in the sheet." And Oscar said, "Oh, that's a Clevin. That's a fake number that Kevin would make out to make sure his like accounting would balance." He said, "What a number times Clevin gets you home by 7." Right, that was his phrasing. So,
I mean, when the show starts out, Kevin is or does seem to be actually smart.
I mean, he's not as dumb as he is portrayed at the end of the series.
Well,
sure.
I mean, Casino Night comes to mind when he's bragging about winning. What was it, that poker competition?
It's like deuce to 7, no limit, Texas Hold'em. Like,
right.
Yeah.
He does, of course, lose to Phyllis, but.
Then it cuts to him saying, "I suck."
Yeah. The Trivia Night episode, right? Kevin's team wins, and he answers a lot of questions. He
answers that question.
He kind of has reasons for, yeah.
He answers that question about the French movie where Marion Cotillard exposes herself.
A number of times in that movie, yeah.
Les Jolies Choses.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He also has a lot of gambling debt.
They also, at the end of that trivia episode, they show them at other trivia
losing
nights.
Yeah, losing badly.
And he in the I mean again in a webisode when he tries to take out a loan to pay off his gambling debts. I mean, that's
wait, so outside,
not secret genius stuff,
right?
outside of the fact that he is generally portrayed, you know, mm-hmm. less intelligent over the course of the show, what is the evidence that Kevin is a secret genius?
I don't really buy this one at all. I think some people kind of talk about how he applied to be in the warehouse and Michael put him in accounting, and that Kevin doesn't actually Kevin doesn't actually like being in accounting, so he's fucking with everyone.
So here's the thing: when you're talking about secret genius, you know who says the phrase "secret genius" is Stanley. And he was talking about Michael, right? Because in the episode Brand Wars,
kind of secret genius.
Sometimes I say crazy things, right?
Yeah.
So the premise is that Michael, you know, doesn't really bite on the bluff from Stanley.
Yeah.
Or he does bite on the bluff from Stanley or something.
You've been meatball.
There we go. Yes, there he is. But you know, he says, "Is Michael some sort of secret genius?" Sometimes I say crazy things, but you look at some of the things that happened with Michael over the course of the show, right? Him putting Ryan in the annex to hire and inspire,
good,
right?
Good manager, and then doesn't Toby, hire people. He hires people and inspires.
Toby, the next episode, is driven so crazy by Ryan and Kelly. He says, "I don't know if he put Ryan back in the annex to torture me, but if so, genius." You know,
his counter to David Wallace when he really has no chips left to play, and he somehow manages to convince a multi-million dollar buyout in David Wallace's own terms. I mean,
well, it's a $60,000 buyout.
Right. When they hire them back.
I get it.
You're talking about a multi-million dollar buyout.
Yeah.
Sea world.
You guys.
Oceans. Fish. Jump. China.
He also, you're talking about Michael Scott's secret genius. He also, his branch begins to perform as soon as they avoid downsizing, right? Ooh. David Wallace calls him to New York and says, "What are you doing right?" You know, he calls Michael up in that regard. And then when Michael is a salesman, you know, he's able to poach clients from Dunder Mifflin. He manages to kind of excel or succeed.
It's compelling to think that Michael is doing this as an act for the camera crew.
Yeah.
There's actually a reason he would do that. My favorite part of Is Michael Actually Smart is when at the end he makes the going away gift for Oscar. And then he's like, and he just accepted it.
Yeah.
He has the lowest opinion of me of anyone.
Yeah. You guys have touched on our third fan theory.
President, they see.
I don't think Kevin's a genius.
Me neither.
But people have said that Michael Scott is also a secret genius. And of course, like, also talking about that he's a great salesman, that he, you know, loves attention. And so he's kind of putting on an act for the camera.
I would buy that more than... Okay, so out on Kevin, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Michael is probably more of an accidental genius than he is a secret genius.
Yeah, right. I would agree with accidental.
I don't think he is intentionally doing these things that are very smart or productive or, you know, successful.
He lucks out sometimes.
I think he almost doesn't really realize what he's actually good at.
You know?
And it's focused too much on the comedy aspect of it all.
There is a kind of a beast...
Somehow I manage.
There's a B-side to Kevin Malone is a genius, which is that he is stealing from the company.
Okay.
There's been a couple of like...
Oh, like laundering money.
Yeah. There's when Martin explains to Kevin what he's been doing, Kevin's like, I had Martin explain to me multiple times what he got arrested for, because it's what I do here every day.
So The Convict, season 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you think? Michael's a secret genius, plausible?
Plausible, I would say unintentional. Unintentional genius.
Secret genius.
Yeah.
It's not some scheme. Well, then
you throw it in secret again. unintentional genius.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he has misplaced intelligence.
Misplaced intelligence. Okay. That's good. All right, well, then let's move on. This one I was not going to include, kind of for reasons that you guys were talking about. Like, you know, like, does the fan theory kind of, like, give you any better understanding of the show or, like, make it more enjoyable in any sort of way? And I was just like, this one is so bizarre that I don't really... But then, okay, here it is. The Office is actually a sitcom written by Jim Halpert.
All right, give me some more of that. Okay. Give me some more of that. So, this is the most interesting one by far so far.
So the idea is that there's, I guess there's a few different ways you can look at it, but let's say this is the way I like to look at it. Jim Halpert is actually just, you know, just a guy who works at this paper company. But he has bigger dreams. And so he's crafted this sitcom that he kind of gets everyone in on, to help him with, right? And that he is sort of the star of it. We learn very little about Jim's, life outside of the office. We know a lot about other people. Do you know what I mean? We never make fun of Jim, really, in the show, in the office. It doesn't ever make fun of Jim, right? Of course, he's always the one who's always aware and stuff like that. So the documentary is fake. He's giving scripts out to everyone. There's jokes that are written it's not a real documentary. But it's filmed in their office in Scranton, PA.
So when do they work?
It's a really bizarre theory.
I don't know. Yeah.
What I was going to say was the reason that I included this one is when you start to watch the show from this
perspective,
it is different. I don't know. What do you think? Why did this?
I got some budget
you?
Questions.
Okay. Yeah. 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 It's a successful show.
It's true that if you have to really choose anyone, who's the vantage point of the show? I mean,
Jim is the audience stand-in.
Yeah.
He is the surrogate for the audience. That is why throughout the show, when they cut to him, he gives these weird facial expressions to be like, that's not correct. Or that's funny, right?
Can you believe this?
Yeah. Can you believe this? Yeah.
Here, I'll read. I'll read something really quick.
Yeah. Give us some source material. What comment did this come out of?
Never mind. I can't find the thing that I was going to read. But that's really all it is.
Interesting.
It doesn't really explain. I mean, it kind of just says that, you know, in the universe of the show, it's not a documentary. Jim Halpert is writing the show and writing the jokes and directing the action.
I would be more open to this theory if the camera crew did not get involved at the end of season 9.
Yeah.
If the camera crew didn't say, if there is, at the beginning of season 9, Jim and Pam at the end of the pilot episode, or the end of the cold open for the first episode, I think, take off their mic packs and they say, don't you think you have enough content? You've been here for 9 years, right? And they say, well, we're actually just kind of seeing what happens to you guys.
It's all part of the show. It's all scripted. The guy behind the camera who's saying that is directed. Is Jim told him to say that?
I don't really follow.
I know it's really bizarre and it doesn't really I don't really understand.
It doesn't
why
pass a basic interrogation. It doesn't hold up to even rudimentary questioning.
Flimsy alibi. Yeah. It's got nothing.
Again,
it's true. If you ended the series with Michael walking away at the airport. Maybe. That's an interesting theory.
If you end the show with D'Angelo eating the cake and Dwight turning to Jim and saying, oh, no. Right. Then you could buy it because the camera crew is not involved. You don't have these other... If we're to believe that Jim is directing the scenes, then there's a level of the show which is the characters acting for the camera. There's a level of the show where the camera crew is interacting with the actors who are acting for the camera.
Yes.
And then another level behind that where Jim is still conducting all the action.
And if that's the case, I mean, the special effects, the stuntmen, I mean, it's incredible stuff. I mean, then that means that whatever actor's playing Dwight in this universe, really got hit by a car, hit his head super hard, threw up all over the car.
Right.
Meredith got hit by, he's asking, these are some real stunts that were getting pulled off.
I mean, you know, you could say that...
Dwight crashed his car and then... Yeah.
He made that first season on a shoestring budget. And then...
Some feedback.
And then,
too fat.
You know, NBC was like, this is good stuff. You know, we can send you some more money and you keep making this show.
So, So the idea is that Jim is creating and writing the show for NBC, and then nine seasons later, there's another storyline where the TV show actually airs on another fictional network. They all watch trailers for it.
Getting pretty meta. When I read this, I was like, why? Who cares? What does that even like do to help you watch the show? But when you watch it from this perspective, I got to say, I was starting to think,
You know what I'd find more believable? Switch Jim for Ryan.
Oh, that makes more sense.
Ryan's out at the end of season nine.
He writes himself out.
Mm-hmm. And then all that stuff happens. Ryan is a weird, like, why is he their character a lot of the time? Mm-hmm. And his roles, I don't know. I would believe that more.
See, but like, but that,
or Kelly and Ryan,
like if the
end created the show.
I mean, that's just
we're talking about what actually happened.
Like at the end of the finale, like it shows a shot of the building, and then it zooms out, and it's in a snow globe, and Ryan picks up the snow globe and shakes it up, sets it on his desk, and then leans back in his chair, puts his hand behind his head, and goes,
Anyways, are we
overlooking the idea that it was all Meredith's dream?
You're in limbo.
Are you in or out on this one?
Out.
I want to be in for fun, but I just can't.
I understand the idea of it as a fun thought experiment or as a fun way to watch the show. I don't think it tracks over nine seasons.
No. I'm with you there.
Yeah.
Do you like having to defend all of these for us?
Yes.
That you have to be the one who is submitting this for our
criticism? I was sitting at home reading these being like, what? You know, so yes. And now I have to. Now you have to fight for them all.
Yeah.
And fight for them. And I will. It's my job. Let's move on.
Okay.
The office is actually hell. Stanley's hell. In the episode Stress Relief, Stanley dies of a heart attack.
Whoa.
And
did I stutter?
And from that point on, we are just living in Stanley's hell.
What about before the heart attack?
You know, that
Stanley's heaven.
This is you could look at it that way. The one I was reading was specifically said that he dies in Stress Relief.
What about Florida Stanley?
That's what I was thinking about. Florida Stanley, it's like he's in heaven.
What about when he retires and carves those birds out of wood?
Other people have said
nine breads a day.
Other people have said that he's in purgatory, which would kind of explain why sometimes things go okay for Stanley. But you could say Stanley's not such a good guy, right? Has multiple affairs.
I mean, it would the cold open where they're trying to get Stanley to realize anything weird that's going on, that helps explain that, I would say.
Yeah.
Of he's just like,
but then he doesn't even notice it.
Or it could be a Groundhog Day loop of Stanley, who's just like, you know, he wakes up every morning and it's the same day over and over again.
What is the quote where he's like, every day I wake up and go to a job that pays too little, right, so I can send my daughter to a school that's too expensive, and go home to go to sleep in a bed that's too small.
I like this one. I do like it.
You know what I think is a better theory? That the office itself is purgatory, right? That all these characters are in sort of this existential waiting room, right? And in the meantime, they're just like selling paper. Or whatever it is, until they get to move on to bigger and better things.
Florida's when they get tested. Jim passes the test.
Mm-hmm. He gets to move to Philly.
He gets to have his... Yeah, he gets to move to Philly, which is not purgatory.
Kathy is the devil.
Kathy is the devil.
No, or Kathy is temptation.
Robert California is the devil.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That's not true. Robert California is the lizard king.
Is that a theory? That Robert California is the devil? Can we talk about that?
Ooh.
Maybe later.
I think I did read something about Robert California that I did not put in this list. What was that? Oh, that Robert California is the Grand Strangler. But I was like, what? I mean, I don't know.
And there are no rules to that game.
There is a better theory about the Grand Strangler, of course.
I'm sure we're getting to that.
Which
is the main event.
Is that Toby Flenderson is the Grand Strangler.
Are we doing this?
Let's do it.
All right.
We're moving on. Toby is the Grand Strangler. Toby brings up that, you know, Radon is killing them and asbestos and all these things. And Michael says, you are the silent killer. And Toby says, you'll see. That was just, that's just a little.
Are you kidding me? You're telling me that radon is silent but deadly, but you expect me to not make farting noises with my mouth. At first, I thought it was a little ant trap, and then I thought it was one of those discs that when you turn it over, it moves. And the third time, I just threw it away because I'd rather die than have to live with this creepy little disc.
Oh, wait, Sean, I should have fit this in. All right, bring the theory up again.
Okay. Toby Flenderson is the Scranton Strangler.
Sir, there has been a murder.
Oh, that's...
And you are a suspect.
That was just for you. So that okay. evidence you brought up is, it's pretty, that's like the strongest one of all of them where it says, you'll see.
Yeah, like, that, just that little bit. I did see someone included that in their explanation for this theory, and I thought that was great. Of course, Toby is on the jury for the Scranton Strangler, and he sends a man to jail.
Howard Scubb?
Howard Scubb.
George Howard Scubb.
George Howard Scubb, excuse me. And he feels really bad about this and is like, you know, says that he sent an innocent man to
jail. You think
jail.
You feel bad? I may have sentenced an innocent man to death.
Yeah. You know... why does he think this is an innocent man? Because he knows that he did the murders.
The car. Can we talk about his car?
Let's talk about his car.
That's another huge...
What? Give me that. I didn't find that tidbit.
Oh, so yeah. So the car that Toby drives...
They're watching... There's a cold open where they're watching a news segment about the Scranton Strangler and how the Scranton Strangler is in a car chase. He's being hunted down by the police.
Oh, yeah.
And they realize that it's in their area, and they look out the window, and they watch that car drive by. And then Michael goes outside and collects some gravel and says, you see this, kids? You can go sell this and buy yourselves a spaceship. Yeah, buy yourself a spaceship, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think the idea is that Toby is not in the office with them when that happens. He comes in later in the episode.
There's a picture. It's literally like everybody except him. Plus, ooh, his car is not... So it's Toby's car. He has the same car. We've seen his car in the parking lot, and his car is not in the lot during that episode.
Whoa.
It's the same car. It matches up.
Yeah.
And he's not there.
This is one of the better theories. I mean, of course, there's all the other evidence is really that Toby is quiet and recluse and kind of strange.
He writes the mystery novels.
He obsesses over Pam and obsesses over
Nelly.
And yeah, he likes jellies and jams.
No, that's Rory Flenderson.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
I mean, he loves the detective novels and things like that.
The Flenderson Files. Depa-bum.
Write your own damn novel.
he goes to meet George Howard Scubb and ends in a neck brace.
Yeah.
I mean, I just mean like maybe he knows Toby did it or something. And
And so that's why he attacked him.
Mm-hmm. He grabs Pam's leg. He's got...
Yeah,
he's a creepy gripper.
I don't think you can look at that, putting his hand on Pam's knee as evidence of strangulation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'm gonna consider it. What do you think about this one? Plausible?
More plausible than most.
I mean, this one, especially with the car thing, I think that this one is like closest to like the writers actually deciding.
It helps that he's a writer.
Right.
I like, in terms of supporting this theory, I like that there is visual evidence to back up. Toby's not in frame, right? Mm-hmm. Toby is very intimately involved with this case. Toby is so involved in mystery novels and intrigue and that kind of thing that this actually, at the very least, this seems much more plausible than so many of the other theories we've discussed.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking about that part, too, when Nelly dresses up as him and he's super creepy about it. Yeah. Mm. He can be weird.
I think the only thing that gives me pause with this theory is how conflicted he feels about George Howard Scubb and sentencing him to death and how he goes to visit him.
Right.
How he doesn't stop talking about it. Right. Like if he did this.
Right. He's getting away with.
Right. Like, why would he be so eager to remind people that this happened and that this person is gone?
I mean, he's a madman.
And maybe he thought he'd be caught and he's disappointed he wasn't.
Mm-hmm. He wants the credit for it.
He wanted to be somebody finally.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? I mean.
Anyways, well, I think that's a pretty damn good one, huh?
I think it's definitely, like you said, I think it's the most. I think it adds the most to the show. I think the fact that Paul Eberstein's a writer, he may have as a fun thing. Maybe they at some point realized, oh, wouldn't that be fun if that was true? Maybe they read it you know, at some point.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, we could actually kind of hint it, but never thing it. And the official Office YouTube channel made a Making a Strangler video.
Yeah.
It's the only
and
fan
if you
theory.
Haven't seen it, go check it out. That's a fun little
it's
video.
It's the only fan theory that like they've bothered to edit together. So I'm in.
Here's piggybacking off of that one. I've got another Toby-related theory for you.
God bless you.
Michael hates Toby.
Okay.
Because.
Yeah. Not up for debate.
Because of divorce.
Why are you the way that you are?
Michael's has some daddy issues, right? His mom remarried when he was young. I hate you, right? He's walking down the, he's Jeff. The ring bearer. Yeah, Jeff.
Funny enough, later that dog peed all over everything and no one said boo.
and Michael.
Well, let me tell you this. My mom was marrying Jeff and I was supposed to be ring bearer and somehow my pants became wet.
Michael, of course, brings up a lot that Toby's divorced, right?
Yeah, Toby is in HR, so he's not really a part of our family. Also, Toby is divorced, so he's not really a part of his family.
Right.
God, it's so harsh.
I was almost like, I thought that that was so solid. I was like, that's not even a fan theory. That's just an explanation for something that I never realized.
There's also a moment in the Hot Girl episode in season one where Michael is taking Katie, Amy Adams around to meet everyone. And Toby and Katie start to connect over the fact that they both went to Bishop O'Hara.
Mm-hmm.
And they start to kind of hit it off. And Michael jumps in and says, Toby is divorced. That was really hard for you. And you have a kid. And you had to sleep in your car that one night. Just a hard stop on their conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I, what do you think?
I don't know, Toby. Your answer to everything is get divorced.
I'm so glad you remember all those quotes because I didn't have time to look them up.
Yeah.
this is what I'm here for.
Right off the cuff.
Yeah. This is the only time when this knowledge is useful. So I'm glad that I can use it.
I mean, Michael's reason for hating Toby, he's stated, which is he's from corporate. Therefore, Michael doesn't really have any control over him. And he's a wet blanket on everything fun Michael tries to do.
But deep down.
But is there something?
Yeah.
I mean...
Subconscious.
So is Holly. She's from corporate, you know. So, but I mean, that's a different setting.
Yeah, but Holly is very warm. Michael is pretty sure that she's baked on a professional level.
I mean, I could see it. I could see Michael resenting. Who's actually the most similar to Michael in the office? It's Toby.
Right.
As far as like age, they're single.
I see what you're saying.
I just mean generally in terms of where they're at in their life. But
demographically.
Yeah. But at least Toby has been married, has a kid, and Michael might just resent Toby for those things and remind him of all the things he also doesn't have.
Right.
Even though, and while poking fun at him, because people don't seem to hate Toby. People don't.
Right.
So Michael's like, he's my punching bag. I don't know. But who knows? The psychology of Michael, that's a whole thing.
Yeah. A moment that kind of goes along with that is when, during Niagara, when Dwight hooks up with Isabel, Pam's friend, and the next morning, Dwight is eating a
universal
ton of
donor.
Yeah, right. Dwight is eating a ton of food, and Michael says, "How can you eat like this?" And Dwight says, "I'm ravenous after a night of lovemaking." And then at the end, he says, "Do you think you'll ever see her again?" And Dwight says, "No, she's a dental hygienist from Carbondale. She's a bumpkin, and she makes love like it, or something,
oh my God,
something
really
along
mean.
Those lines,
Jeez.
Right? Yeah, very, very mean thing to say." And Michael says, "You're not interested in her. You could double date with Jim and Pam. You're not gonna follow up." And Dwight says, "No." And then Dwight says, "Why don't you ask her out?" And Michael says, "I already have." My European girlfriend. And I love the way that he delivers that line because it's almost as if I already have. And then also, I already have my European girlfriend.
Right.
This fake girlfriend that Michael has made up because Michael is so deeply afraid of ending up alone. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So just that idea that he resents other people who maybe have found love, but then they can't make it work.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Because as Michael says to Jan, He wants the tickle fights. He wants the cuddling. He wants the...
The white picket fence.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
I want the tickling.
And the giggling.
As a count, another point that looks to the opposite of that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
When Andy is manager, Toby says something to kind of contradict him. And Andy says, I'm beginning to see why Michael hated you. And Toby says, no, Andy, no.
No, he says, he didn't.
Yeah.
he didn't.
So I guess there are kind of two ways to see that. But I think that's an interesting thing. I would say it's a very subconscious thing with Michael.
Yeah.
Here's a fun one, okay?
Finally.
Fun one.
Creed
Season 4, Episode 1.
Creed needs to scuba. Because he's trying...
If I can't scuba, then what's this all been about?
Because he's trying to catch the Loch Ness Monster.
All right, I'm in already. Right. I'm in already. Please
what's
give...
the other quote? It's like two arms, a face, a butt.
A penis.
I have just described to you the Loch Ness Monster.
And underneath, all the treasure in Scotland. So the question remains, what are you waiting for?
The guy was just hanging brain. I mean, what's all the fuss?
You could give me anything about Creed and I'm in. It's like, sure, you can't disprove anything about Creed. I mean, there's all sorts of unresolved things we hear. One of the drops I play, this
and
one.
And I'll have two chairs. Only one to go.
What's he doing?
Need to, yeah, like, I really want to know.
Anything is possible in Great Britain.
Yes, I'm in. I'm in on Creed.
Yeah, I thought that this one, you can't deny it. It's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
The only evidence are those two quotes.
Sure.
But right.
That's all you need with Creed.
That's all you get with Creed. Just a little quote here and there.
He makes fake licenses. He has a fake identity.
He's got a worm guy.
He's been living, running from the government for this entire series.
That wasn't a tapeworm that Kelly ate.
Who's your worm guy?
Wow, that's all the Creed drops I got. We got them all out.
Dang.
Oh, no, this one.
That is Northern Lights Cannabis Indica.
I got to get that drop.
Another one that I was like, man, that's not even a fan theory. Creed Bratton is not Creed Bratton, but he pretty much says that.
Yeah. Charles Schneider.
William Charles Schneider.
There he goes. Which I guess is his real name, the actor's real
name. That's the real name.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So.
What a character that Jim Halpert wrote, though.
Yeah, that's one of his best.
Yeah, yeah. Mastermind.
It's his grandpa.
Okay. Phyllis and Stanley have had an affair.
I never had an orgasm until I was 42.
As soon as you say a character, I'm just like, what do I got?
Evidence, please.
Yeah.
Most of the evidence is in the finale. Stanley says that over the course of the documentary, he's had three affairs, but we only know about two. Cynthia and Lydia, his nurse. So who's the third? Then there's Phyllis talks about Stanley and is kind of has this moment where she's like, you know, he's a very sweet man. Like people don't know the real
Stanley. Everyone thinks he's this big grump.
Yeah. They have a certain connection, it seems like, throughout the show, right? You know, just moments like when Stanley's got the sea monster mask on and for Halloween and Phyllis is like, he wears that so he can sleep. I mean,
there's also that moment. I think Phyllis is on the other end of this high five when the episode is business ethics at the beginning of season 5.
Just keep bringing the ribs.
Just keep the ribs coming.
Yeah.
And they high five, right? Mm-hmm. There's also a moment where Jim is trying to convince Stanley and Phyllis to cover for him while he goes to Philly in case something comes up with one of his clients. Mm-hmm. And Stanley says, okay, but you got to take us to lunch first.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And so they take them both out to lunch. Stanley orders the surf and turf with a side of lobster. Sir, that already comes with lobster. And he says, I know, it doesn't come with enough
lobster.
Not
enough lobster.
Bring more lobster. And Phyllis says, do you have wine? And she eventually, like...
She's trying to rip...
Prize the decorative bottle of wine up. Yeah, so...
Yeah.
And then they're like, we're going to cover for you, sweetie.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
We're really pressing your beans.
Yeah, they're like a grandma and grandpa or
yeah, shucking
like
your
that.
Peas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think about that one?
You think Stanley's growing trees? Well, they don't.
Show me that farm.
You think the world is crawling with Phyllis's? Show me that farm.
Thank you.
Sorry. No, I'm out.
Also out.
Well, look.
Pumpkin's out.
Any
pumpkin's out. Gang.
Any theory where all the evidence awesome. Is in one episode, I'm just like, that's like why yeah. the Toby thing
heavy
makes
at the end. Stanley carves whittles her little sculpture of herself with bird feet. Right? In the finale?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does.
And the new Stanley comes in and she's like, she's like trying
she
to fatten him up.
More fudge. And he says, oh, gosh, I've gained like 10 pounds since
right,
I started.
Yeah, yeah.
She's so
right.
happy about it. Yeah. That's such a great moment.
There's also a moment where in conflict resolution where I think Phyllis says, Stanley and I are close. And Stanley says, we sit close.
That's because he doesn't want people to catch on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think so.
Alex is out. Edwin.
Edwin is out.
I'm in. I think that's kind of funny, and it's like a little bit of an aha moment for
sure,
me when I
sure
grandma and grandpa, huh?
I would say like, wait, was the theory that they were lovers, or the theory is just, or they just had an affair?
So
had
an affair,
and the fan theory that I read specifically said that they had an affair before the show even starts.
That,
because not yeah. that, not that she cheats on Bob Vance. To have an affair with.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was. It's like, if it happened way a long time ago and just once, like a
that's
like
that
a
is,
drunk business trip, something happened.
That's
like, okay,
kind of the.
Maybe.
That is what the theory is.
Maybe.
Wait, but that sounds even like more. That sounds even less backed up by evidence.
Yeah.
That, like, it's sometime in the distant past before mm-hmm. they were on the show, mm-hmm. there was this mythical trip where Stanley and Phyllis hooked up.
Yeah.
Sure,
you got it.
Sure, no.
All right, you guys are out. I think that's a fun one. I like that.
Pumpkin
one.
Is out.
Why don't you try this one on?
Edwin Pumpkin James.
I get that a lot.
At the end of Casino Night, the finale of season 2.
I've seen it.
Jim and Pam kiss twice.
Yeah,
and Pam initiates the second kiss. Okay, so the way that this works is at the end of the episode, we see Jim come upstairs, grab her, kiss her, and then I think they kind of they pull off of that kiss, and
it's a cut. It's the end of
yeah,
the season.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when we pick up in season 3 and we see this as a flashback, they pull away, and there's kind of like a like.
Are
I'm
you
not,
drunk?
Yeah,
I'm not drunk.
We're just drunk.
Jim
I'm not
says,
drunk.
"Are you really going to marry this guy?"
Yeah, yeah. So there's kind of a weird break that allow, like, in the editing of this, that allows that people think that we're actually watching two separate kisses, and that Pam was probably the one who initiated the second kiss. I don't know really what value that has beyond just that, like. Pam is even more into it than we already thought, but whatever.
You guys
remember
you guys remember their first kiss,
of course, at
the
Dundies. Yeah.
And Pam
yeah.
initiates that,
right?
She definitely does. Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
This, I mean, I guess this has a little. This is kind of a Han shot first theory, and like, does this change? This changes maybe a season of The Office,
mm-hmm.
But like, at the end of the day, they're still getting married, and I don't know.
Right. She's not going to break it off with Roy.
Yeah, I don't think it changes the moment.
Yeah. Because they do... The way that Pam says no after Jim asks, he's like, no, I'm not drunk. Are you drunk? Mm-hmm. And she says no, like, no. Like, I'm not. Let's do that again. Like, there
yeah.
is, like, I could see that, but... I don't know what it changes, or it seems like it was mutual, the second
yeah.
one. I wouldn't say she initiated it.
I think this one's fun because it's like, yeah, the way that that's cut, it could have happened, but I just don't know what how that really changes anything beyond just that, like, Pam is more into it than we thought originally. I don't know.
I mean, I think the thing is they're both into it. They're just both very conflicted, and they're with different
totally.
People at different times. It's...
I think
yeah.
it makes it. I think maybe the fact that they both kissed each other in that moment makes it even harder later. You know, that Pam still wanted to marry Roy, and you know, that Jim, when he comes back in season 3, still, you know, hasn't really forgiven her for all that. I don't know.
Do you think that Jim is in a position where he needs to forgive her in season 3? When he comes back?
No.
That's not the...
No, but he's kind of mean to her, right? He's not really... Or he's not very friendly to her anymore.
He's a little distant
he's very distant. I agree with that.
He's like, look, I made my move. You said no, we're done. Mm-hmm. Right. That's sort of his general vibe. Yeah. Of like, don't...
Brangelina is with Frangelina.
Mm-hmm. The door was open.
Here's
closed,
a non-hypothetical. I'm with Karen. He says that in Phyllis's wedding when he watches Pam leave with Roy. And he looks and he's visibly kind of upset.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Plausible?
I think this is by far the most plausible. I think it's a correlation that this is the most plausible with the fact that it impacts the least on the show.
Right.
I think she allowed the second kiss. I don't know if she necessarily initiated.
Right.
But.
I mean, it seems like the kiss was mutual, right?
Yeah.
It's because Jim says, I've wanted to do that for a long time, and Pam says me too.
Right.
Right?
Jim had an affair in the end of the show.
With?
Possibly Kathy Sims. So in the last season, we don't see a lot of Jim and Philly. And obviously, like, their marriage is kind of
what about him and Daryl living in that apartment?
Him and Daryl? Could maybe be.
They got had a little special drink. They said, let's see what it feels.
The theory is sort of that, you know, we don't really see a lot of Jim in this last season. And he's kind of an asshole in a lot of ways now. And when they're on stage doing the panel about the documentary, right? They do that, like, big public appearance.
I'm aware.
Again, we've seen the whole show.
Pam is trying to defend herself, and then Jim jumps in really quick to be like, you know, there were a lot of things going on and blah blah blah. Really the only angle here is just that the evidence here is just that he is acting strangely in the last season. We don't see a lot of him. Pam is like distraught about their relationship, but it's not entirely clear, like, you know, why. And that the producers of the documentary have helped kind of keep this out of the narrative. What do you think?
Well, this conflicts with the Jim is writing a sitcom.
We're back in the real documentary universe.
Yeah. Again, there's not really evidence.
No, there's not.
Especially if you try to bring Kathy into it, I don't think it makes sense. A big part of the plot in season 8 is Kathy is very much trying to get with Jim. And she says that on the phone to a friend.
Right.
Right. And I mean, and the whole thing is Jim trying to fight temptation, right? That's the whole sort of crux of that.
Yeah, and it's hard for him.
Yeah. I think the whole thing in season 9, he's acting weirdly because...
I don't even think Jim was tempted. I think he's just really, it's so obvious what she's doing.
He's more uncomfortable.
And he's like,
that's very fair.
I do not want her in my room.
That's fair, yeah.
Yeah.
This is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't
know. Yeah, I mean, that's a...
That's a great call out. I think Jim is more uncomfortable than he is tempted. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
I just think in season 9, when they have this conflict, it's less about, it's like, huh, Jim is acting strange. It's more like Jim is very clearly sort of outgrowing the life that they have in Scranton, right? And Pam is not ready to give that up, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe Pam is so comfortable and so happy with the life they have in Scranton, right, that she doesn't want to give that up. And I think that's where that sort of disconnect or that abrasion kind of comes from. And like, I mean, I've talked about this on the show. Like, I really don't like that disconnect in general. I don't think it plays well. It's not romantic tension. You know what I mean? I never took that in watching it to mean that Jim is having an affair.
Yeah.
The only thing I am worried about is getting a boner.
Yeah, I think this is one that you can kind of watch the show from that angle, but it doesn't really make anything better or make any more sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's like, if you think Jim's a good guy, Jim's a bad guy. That's really what...
Right.
It's like...
And he's definitely a bad guy. But we could talk about that later.
Topic for another episode.
I think we've reached our last one here. We kind of... I've picked through this list quite a bit. I'm going to end on this one. The Scranton branch is suffering from radon poisoning. As the show goes on, they all become more extreme versions of themselves. I mean, you think about episodes like when they get that espresso machine and are like ripping the carpets out and like Stairmageddon.
That's the espresso, not the radon.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the but I've that'd be a lot of espresso.
Murder.
Murder. Stairmageddon, when Dwight just like shoots
Stanley
with bear tranquilizers, and then Stanley stabs himself with bear tranquilizers at the end.
Bull tranquilizers.
It just gets, the show gets, I mean, and we've talked about this too, that it's like, you know, the office is really calm and quiet in the early seasons, and it just gets more wild and crazy as the show goes on. So one explanation for that is that everyone is slowly suffering from radon poisoning, just Toby predicted.
The first thing that came to my mind is to conceive of Senior Lodenstein as an actual solution to that problem is insane.
Porque es muy rápido.
Yeah,
that's always bothered me. That like you think having grease on the bottom of every box, like you're gonna load that in a truck and say we did it. Like,
yeah,
you must be high.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So there you go. They're high. They're going crazy from radon poisoning.
When Pete and Clark come in and they're like, everyone's super weird, and then they slow up at the end of the season.
They're
starting to get there too.
Yep. What do you think? You like this one?
No. I mean, a very quick Google search says that radon symptoms of radon poisoning is difficulty breathing, persistent cough. Eventually developing cancer.
Not acting like a lunatic, high-functioning, crazy person.
Exaggerated personalities and generalized insanity don't really fall under the purview of the symptoms of radon poisoning. But I like the idea that there's some weird factor causing them to become more extreme.
What was your favorite fan theory from these fan theories?
Toby's is a grand strangler.
I mean, that's a pretty... Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, the official Office YouTube page is acknowledged. Right, like
they put time into that one.
Yeah.
I think that's the one where you have visual evidence. I think you have Toby being involved with that storyline. I think all of that makes the most sense. I think the rest of these involve us taking a big leap in terms of imagination into what happens off screen. Right.
Right.
When you can really only kind of deal with what happens on screen. And Toby with the Scranton Strangler, I think, has the most
on-screen evidence.
Yeah, just evidence or criteria to kind of back it up. Mm-hmm.
I like the two affairs, the idea that Roy and Angela had an affair and that Stanley and Phyllis had an affair. I thought that was there is some good evidence for that. I mean, you know, of course Angela and Roy could just have little crushes on each other, and that's all it is. There's not. I don't know. I thought those were funny. I thought for me when I read those, I was kind of like, aha, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
Hadn't thought about that.
I think conceptually, I like Michael as an accidental genius.
Yeah, that's fun. That was mine. Yeah.
That's, I mean, that's less of a conspiracy theory, more of just like a fun thing to think about. Mm-hmm. And then I think if you want to get existential and very, very conceptual, the idea that the office is purgatory, and granted, this is something that I kind of threw out there, but like the idea that the office is purgatory is more fun to think about because, like, you know, so often you hear about Lost, right? Is Lost is purgatory, and they all, when the plane crashed, they all died, right? But then think about when they go downstairs in the Boys and Girls episode in season 2, Dwight turns to the camera and says, remember in Lost when they met the others?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then when Dwight takes Ryan for the salesman initiation, he says, what is the Dharma Initiative? Right.
Right.
A little Lost tie-ins.
Yeah, always,
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that one's kind of fun to think about.
That's a good one.
Quick note, too, speaking of Dwight. I mean, we didn't mention Dwight really at all this entire episode as far as there are zero fan theories about him.
I guess
which backs up the evidence that he might be the most stable, honest person in the office. I don't think he has many secrets.
I don't know about stable.
Yeah.
Only because he is open to the idea of taking anxiety medication from Nellie in season 9.
I guess in season 9.
And he attributes his diminished sort of screen presence in season 8 by not getting the manager job to how much martial arts and Krav Maga and meditation he's doing.
Right, right.
An hour of meditation at dawn, mm-hmm. karate before work, Krav Maga after work, and then meditation at sunset.
Yeah. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting that it's like, we didn't even talk about Dwight.
That's a good point.
Come up, mm-hmm. And he's a very main character.
Well, to our listeners at home, if you have a fan theory about Dwight or a fan theory about anything or any opinions on these fan theories, you can reach out to us and let us know, and we'd love to hear it. You can hit us up on Facebook. You can hit us up on Twitter at Michael Scott Pod, Instagram, Michael Scott Podcast Company. We have a phone number. I've mentioned this before. I'm going to give you the number again. It's 503-694-9314. Give us a call and leave us a message, and maybe we'll play it on the show and discuss what your opinion is or your fan theory is. I mean, I think that there's more fan theories to be had out there. You know, this is what I could find in a couple days of researching, but I think there's more that we could come up with. And that was really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, now it's time for a new segment on the show we like to call Conference Room.
All right, you know what? That's it. Conference Room, 5 minutes.
What is Conference Room?
Conference
John?
Room, this is when we're just going to pick a short topic to riff on for a little bit. It's not trivia. It's not a main discussion. Today's is sex slang inspired by office quotes or by The Office. At first, we were just, you know what? I think we actually got this idea from the Office Superfan
Facebook group.
Facebook group. So shout out to the Office Superfan Facebook group.
I did not look at that thread.
I didn't look at that thread.
Didn't know it existed.
But that's the spirit. It was they said sexual positions. I think we're kind of branching out a little bit further than that.
A go-to move, a makeout technique, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, just anything involving romance.
Think like the dentist system from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
I came with just only a few prepared, but it sounds like you guys came with mm-hmm. a lot.
And really quickly, too, for this segment, just for the future, it's like sometimes one of us will bring a top five list. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll have a weird voicemail. We'll just one. It's like...
The
way Michael would pull The Office and just be like, we're talking about this now.
We started talking about toilet paper, right? Where do you use toilet paper? Uranus. And then talking about planets. And I think we all learned a little something about how small we are.
That's right.
I'll start us off
with
the concierge Marie. Bang them and kick them out of your hotel room.
But keep the shoes for a second.
Yeah, keep the...
Astro cleaners, that's a good one.
It's when you bring someone over. It's a one-night stand, but you keep their shoes.
Yeah. Edwin?
I don't really have logistics or explanations for a lot of these. Mm-hmm. Okay. But what I lack in quality, I do have in quantity.
Okay.
So this one is just called the win-win-win.
I like that.
Yeah, just a the threesome that went well.
That's right.
You have everybody. Another?
I have many others.
Rattle off.
Give me a one, two.
Milk and sugar.
Milk and sugar.
I have the blind guy McSqueezy, which is just having sex in a like completely pitch black room when you can't see anything at all.
That's good.
A lot of feeling around.
Blind guy McSqueezy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be a fun little role playing.
The women in my improv class hate him.
Another one I came up with, no logistics for this one. Yankee swap. That's what makes it fun. I'm not really sure what that exactly would look like.
This is Serenity by Jan. This is just when you set the mood by lighting a bunch of candles. Mm.
Oh, hell yeah.
I also said the Serenity by Jan, which is when you're dressed in a schoolgirl outfit and then you have a performance review afterwards.
All right, guys. I really didn't come prepared with so let's hear them. What do you got?
I have the Lone Ranger and Tonto and Bonto, which is a date where you watch a Western movie. I'm just gonna make these up.
Like that.
This is when this would be a way that you would like end a first date if you're not the moment where you're like, kiss. What do we do? It's in that moment you could pull off the Angela, which is a stern look and a handshake.
This one is just called Flonkerton, and this is when when you go out with a delegate from Iceland.
The Florida Stanley is when you cheat on someone in a convertible.
That's good.
It's not good to do. It's terrible to cigar. Do. It's a Florida Stanley.
Listening to Loggins and Messina.
Did I say Messina? Just Margarita Karaoke Christmas.
Explains itself.
Yeah.
The fun run is when you have you eat fettuccine Alfredo before having sex.
Oh my God.
I challenge our listeners to pull it off.
Let us know how it worked for you. 503-694-9314.
How did the fun run
go? We want to hear about it.
This is just banana slings.
I have the Bratton, or perhaps the Grassroot, which is when another man slips in there. There's really no way of knowing.
Well, and then you could have the Great Bratton.
This is just take a good look. It's when you do a romantic reading of Joe Bennett's autobiography.
I was going to say that'd be like when Phyllis and Bob just
oh, yeah.
stand there and look at each other's mm-hmm. naked bodies without touching.
Mm-hmm. The aggro tourist is when someone reads you Harry Potter after sex.
This is just a list, but
shout out to the bee farm.
It all goes together. Goat on chicken on goat, couple of chickens doing a goat, couple of pigs watching. Oh, God,
this one is a real one here. It's the Dundee is when you're making love and perhaps the office is going in the background because you were watching it. And you at one point you laugh because of something that happened on The Office while it's happening.
Wait, did you say that's a real one?
I just mean that, you know, that may or may not have happened yeah. in my life. But that's when that happens, you earned a Dundee. That's what you get.
That's a good one.
When The Office is so good, it distracts you.
That's perfect.
I have one called Doing the Scar, and it's when you go to the right and you shake that hand. You go to the left, you shake that hand. You make them friends, you tie some yarn, and that's how you do the scar.
The Nard Dog.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Okay.
It's just when you get a tattoo on your butt. No certain time, just whenever.
That's good. Yeah. Okay, Edwin.
I have this one. It says, and Gaby makes three. when you have a surprise third. Yeah.
Just Gabe Lewis joins your.
Mm-hmm.
The last one I have is the Senior Lodenstein.
Oh, that's just
when you get all greased up before.
Oh my goodness!
I have a ton of these with no context. Okay. I'm just going to read them.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's just give it and then
give
yeah.
it to us.
Ryan's pesto party.
Okay.
I my mom makes the best pesto, and I said, "Hey, mom, will you make a bunch of pesto? I'm having a pesto party with all my friends." She was like, "Oh, okay."
Oh wait.
And Phyllis had that certain mom look about her.
Really quick, I forgot one more. Speaking of Ryan, thewoof.com is when you group text. All your booty calls at the same time.
Oh, that's good.
Very good.
I like that.
BTB, bring that booty.
The Wolf.
Bibbidi Bobbidi, give me the sobbity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The Dandy Dale and Fobby McGee.
Oh, that's good.
Fear is the greatest snowball. Tan almost everywhere. Jan almost everywhere.
That's a good one.
Teehee, diary, what a week. Michael's homemade potato salad.
Oh.
Going Mach 5.
Yep. Going Mach 5 is good.
The Fluffy Fingers.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
The Battle of Shroot Farms.
Oh, boy.
I Am Bacchus, God of Wine. Sandwich Delivery for Oscar Martinez.
I just pictured... Okay. I feel like you just...
Yeah.
That's just something that you say before having sex with Oscar Martinez.
Dink and Flicka. Let's
Dink
see.
And Flickle.
Let's see. Beer Me 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's it.
That was good.
What a list.
Those were good.
Wow.
Edwin wins.
Fruitful. Very much so. Very
great
much
logistics,
so.
Though, from
quantity yeah. over quality. That's what we learned today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening. Of course, we'll be back next week with a new topic and a new episode. Go ahead and check us out, those social media places, and give us a call. Let us know what you think. We'd love to talk about what your opinions are. So with that, thanks for listening. See you next time.
Bibbidi Poppy, give me the zombie.
Yes, sir.
Bye-bye.
Well, my name's Michael Scarn, and I'm here to say I'm about to do the Scarn in a major way. You jump to the right and you shake a hand. And you jump to the left and you shake that hand. You meet new friends, you tie some yarn. And that's how you do the scone. You jump to the right and you shake that hand. And you jump to the left and you shake that hand. Meet new friends, tie that yarn. That's how you do the scone. You jump to the right and you shake that hand. And you jump to the left and you shake that hand. Meet new friends, tie that yarn. That's how you do the scone.
Wait. Don't skip ahead just yet. I know you were about to. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you'll love mine too. If you like podcasts that break down all of your favorite water cooler reality TV shows like The Real Housewives or big budget movies like Wakanda Forever, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe to my podcast, Reality and Comics 2, and listen to episodes like my interview with Robin Dixon of The Real Housewives of Potomac or my interviews with your favorite bombshells from Love Island USA. That's Reality and Comics 2. And I'm Kendrick. See you there.